changes in who you are, what you feel, and how you live. What did I tell you in the very beginning of the book? The woman that I was 7 years ago, gone. Absolutely gone. I also told you that every phase of your life requires a different you. If you change your decisions, you'll change your life. And what's going to change your decisions more than anything? A little bit of courage. Chapter 5. Before I discovered the 5-second rule, if you asked me to give you examples of courage, I would have given you a list of history makers. I never would have said that courage is what it takes some days to get out of bed, speak to your boss, pick up the phone, or step on a scale. I would have told you that courage is a word used to describe acts of bravery. Courageous people, in my view, were Nobel Prize winners. Malala Yousafzai, Lima Bowie, Aung San Suu Kyi, the Dalai Lama, Nelson Mandela, and Elie Wiesel. I would have thought about Winston Churchill and Britain standing up to fight against Nazi Germany, or Rosa Parks standing up for her right to keep her seat on the bus, and Muhammad Ali steadfast in his religious beliefs and refusing to fight in Vietnam. When I thought of courage, I would have been reminded of Helen Keller, who triumphed over her own disabilities to advance the rights of others, or Sir Ernest Shackleton, who overcame shocking, stunning odds, actually, to rescue the crew of the Endurance, or of Galileo, who challenged the Orthodox Church to advance science. But after using the rule for 7 years and hearing from so many people around the world, I have learned a very important certainty. Everyday life is full of moments that are scary, uncertain, and difficult. And facing these moments and unlocking the opportunity, magic, and joy in your life, it requires tremendous courage. Courage is precisely what the 5-second rule is going to give you. The rule gave Jose the courage to believe in his value and ask for a raise. As he posted on Instagram, "I made a choice in 5 seconds to talk to my boss about my raise that I much deserved. I was determined I would let him know how much I'm worth." And he was so excited because he asked for and got a raise. And then when he checked his paycheck, he was shocked to see that he was given a bigger raise than he would even ask for. And his boss told him that he was, quote, too valuable. And with no hesitation, not only agreed to what he asked for, but gave him even more. The rule gave Bryce the courage to put 2 years into working on and publishing his first cookbook. And he didn't stop there. He got Barnes & Noble to host a book signing. As Bryce puts it, quote, "You can achieve anything that you're passionate about and willing to work for." And here's the crazy part. He was only 15 at the time when he discovered the 5-second rule and made all this happen. The rule helped Martin push past through 9 years. 9 years. How long have you been holding yourself back? Martin was holding himself back for 9 years, one excuse after another, slamming on the brakes so hard. And now he's finally going back to school and pursuing a second master's degree that's going to give him a much more fulfilling career. Juanita learned to listen to her inner wisdom using the 5-second rule. Instead of thinking about a job search and a company that her friend just recommended, she did something she had never done before. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. She picked up the phone and called right now, right when she learned about the company. And guess what she got? She got exactly what she pushed herself to do. She got a dream job. Learning about the 5-second rule was a turning point for Gabe, and I want it to be a turning point for you too. After realizing that, quote, "I was responsible for everything that happened in my life," Gabe used the rule to change his life and start his own virtual reality company. And today, he's in the middle of creating the career of his dreams, 1, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 push at a time. Another person whose life was changed when she discovered the courage that the rule gives you is Kristen. Her life was forever altered because her boyfriend now has a way to battle his drug addiction. You see, whenever he feels the desire to, quote, go back to one of those drugs that he used to be addicted to, he uses the 5-second rule to fight his addiction, retrain his mind, and take control. He counts backwards 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 whenever he feels the urge to reach for the drugs, and that triggers new behavior. And as she puts it, his mindset completely changes and he goes about his day. Courage is in fact what I needed to get out of bed. It was scary to get out of bed because it meant facing my problems. You know, I can look back on it now and it looks like a cakewalk. But when I was going through it, it felt insurmountable. It was really, really scary to admit to myself that I was 41 years old and my life and my career had hit a dead end. It was overwhelming to consider that I might not be able to fix this. Courage is what my daughter needs to put down the pen in her high school history class and raise her hand. It's what your team needs to escalate their concerns to you, and it's what your kid needs to be able to talk to you about what's really going on. Putting up your online dating profile can feel like an act of bravery. So can blocking an ex on social media. Adopting a new technology for your business or walking in the door of your home and facing your problems head on instead of pouring a drink and zoning out in front of the TV. That takes courage too. You know, as I began to write this book and I started collecting stories of people around the world who are using the rule, it became very clear that inside every single decision that you make, there exists 5 seconds of courage that can change absolutely everything about your life. And the more the word courage came up, the more I began to wonder if there was something about one of these historic moments of courage that would help me better understand the nature of courage itself. Now, the first person that came to my mind when I thought about courage was Rosa Parks. You probably know the story of how Rosa Parks sparked the modern American civil rights movement on a chilly December evening in 1955, when she quietly refused to give up her seat on the bus for a white passenger. Her moment of courage teaches us all that it's not the big moves that change everything. It's the smallest ones in your everyday life that do. Now, she didn't plan what she did that night. Mrs. Parks described herself as the kind of person who, quote, tried to be as careful as possible to stay out of trouble. The only thing she planned on doing that evening was to get home after a long day at work and have dinner with her husband. It was just an evening when she boarded that bus, like any other evening on her commute home, until one decision changed everything. Curious about that moment and that decision, I dug in and researched everything I could find about Mrs. Parks from the National Archives, biographies, radio interviews, and newspaper articles. What I found is incredible. Just weeks after her arrest, on December 1st, 1955, she gave a radio interview to Sidney Rogers on Pacifica Radio. And the National Archives website has a recording of it. I listened to it over and over and over again. Here's how Rosa Parks described that historic moment in her own words. As the bus proceeded out of town on the third stop, the white passengers had filled up the brunt of the bus. When I got on the bus, the rear was filled with colored passengers and they were beginning to stand. The seat I occupied was the first of the seats where the Negro passengers take as they on this route. The driver noted that the front of the bus was filled with white passengers and there would be two or three men standing. He looked back and demanded the seats that we were occupying. The other passengers very reluctantly gave up their seats, but I refused to do so. The driver said that if I refused to leave the seat, he would have to call the police. And I told him, just call the police. Then the radio interviewer asked her the million-dollar question. Here is the question. What in the world ever made you decide to be the person who, after all these years of Jim Crow and segregation, what made you at that particular moment decide you were going to keep that seat? She replied very simply, I felt that I was not being treated right, and that I had a right to retain the seat that I had taken as a passenger on that bus. He pressed her again, noting that she had been mistreated for years. I mean, she had ridden this bus every night home after work. She knew the driver, you guys. He wanted to know what made her decide in that moment. She paused, and she said, the time had just come that I had been pushed as far as I could stand to be pushed, I suppose. He asked her if she planned it. She said no. He asked her if it just sort of happened, and she agreed, just sort of happened. Now, this is a critical detail. Rosa Parks didn't hesitate or think it through. It happened so fast, she just listened to her instincts. Her instincts were signaling her, you're not being treated right. And she pushed herself to follow him. Now, since she didn't hesitate, there was no time to talk herself out of it, was there? Imagine if she had stopped and thought about it. She didn't. You know, coincidentally, 4 days later in that same city of Montgomery, Alabama, on December 5th, 1955, there was another five-second decision that changed history. The Montgomery Improvement Association was formed in response to Mrs. Parks' arrest, and a 26-year-old black preacher was voted by his peers to lead the 381-day bus boycott that ensued. On being nominated to lead the boycott that night, the young preacher would later write, "It happened so quickly that I did not have time to think it through. It is probable that if I had, I would have declined the nomination. Thank goodness he didn't stop and think. He would become one of the greatest civil rights leaders of all time. His name, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr." Dr. King was pushed into the spotlight by his peers. He was nominated, and he didn't stop and think. Rosa pushed herself. They both experienced the power of a push. It's a moment when your instincts, your values, and your goals align and you move so quickly, you don't have time or reason to stop yourself. Your heart speaks. You don't think. You listen. You listen to what your heart tells you to do. Greatness, it's not a personality trait. It's inside all of us. It's inside of you. And sometimes it's really hard to see it. I mean, Rosa Parks was described by everybody who knew her as quiet and shy. She never thought she would, quote, be the one to do such a thing. And you probably don't think you're the one to do such a thing either. Dr. King, he famously struggled with self-doubt and fear in the beginning days of the civil rights movement. Reflecting back on the radio that night in 1956, you know what Rosa Parks said? The interviewer actually asked her about this, about, you know, did you plan this and, you know, did you think it through? And Mrs. Park said, I hadn't thought I'd be the person to do this. It hadn't occurred to me. Probably hasn't occurred to you either what great things you might accomplish and be capable of at work or in your lifetime. I wanted to tell you Rosa Parks' example because it shows you that we are all more than capable of finding the courage to act out of character when the moment matters. Yes, it's true, as Rosa explained on air in 1956, that she was pushed as far as she could stand to be pushed by a system of discrimination. But in that singular moment, she was pushed forward by something way more powerful, herself. That's what courage is. Courage is a push. The kind of push we give ourselves when we stand up, speak up, show up, go first, raise our hand, or do whatever feels hard, scary, or uncertain. Do not look at your heroes in history and business and art and music and assume that somehow they're different than you. It's not true. Courage is a birthright. It's inside each and every one of us. You were born with it. And you can tap into it anytime you want. It's not a matter of confidence. Courage is not a matter of education or status or personality or profession. It is simply a matter of knowing how to find it when you need it. And when you need it, I guarantee you, you are going to be alone. It's going to be just you sitting there in a meeting at work, standing in your kitchen, riding the subway. You're going to be looking at your phone or thinking about something, and all of a sudden, it's going to happen. Something's going to go down, and your instincts, they're going to come alive. You're going to have this urge to act. Your values, they're going to tell you what you should do. And your feelings, you know what your feelings are going to do? Your feelings are going to scream, no! That is the push moment. You don't have to have the answers. You just have to make a decision in the next 5 seconds. Dan was alone at his computer thinking about registering for summer classes. You see, he wants to earn his college degree, but at the age of 44, the idea of starting as a freshman is nothing short of terrifying. Courage is what Christine needs. She's sitting in a marketing meeting in Plano, Texas. She has this great idea to share, but she wonders, is this going to sound stupid? Tom, he's alone. He's standing in a bar in Chicago. That's the moment he sees her. He can't look away. Now, he can either turn back towards his friends and pretend to care about the football game they're discussing, or he can find the courage to start walking toward her. The entire sales organization of a financial software company feels discouraged right now in Nashville. They've hit their numbers 3 years in a row in quotas. They just got raised again. Alice in England. She needs to push herself out the door to go for a run. She's inspired by her friend on Facebook, but boy, oh boy, does she feel discouraged by how long it's been since she exercised last. And halfway around the world, Patel. He cannot stop thinking about a friend whose son just died in a car accident. He doesn't know what to say, and the thought of losing his own son terrifies him. He tells himself, okay, it'll be easier if I just wait a few days. But the urge, the instinct to pick up the phone, to stop by the house, to go see his friend, to do something, lingers. But it scares him. In China, Sai's just signed on as a distributor for a new skincare line. Now, she's got at least a dozen people she wants to call, and she's alone as she looks at her phone and hesitates. What if they think I'm being pushy? In Queensland, Todd knows exactly what he wants to do with his life, and it isn't studying law. It's physical education. He's sitting alone in taxation class. But before Todd can take control of his future, he'll need the courage to face his parents' disappointment. And Mark. Mark is lying in bed in Auckland. It's 10:30 at night, and he turns and he looks at his wife as she's reading her book. He would love to make love to her, but he assumes she's not in the mood. He really wants to lean toward her, kiss her shoulder, but he's terrified of getting rejected. He needs courage to lean toward her after so many months of feeling like a roommate. These stories are real, and they're just the tip of the iceberg. They highlight the struggle between our desire to change our lives and our fear of it. They also reveal the power that everyday courage has to transform everything. Seth Godin once wrote, "A different part of our brains is activated when we think about what's possible rather than what's required." I believe the same is true when we think about being courageous rather than focusing on the fears that stop us. It's the difference between focusing on the solution rather than the problem. And that tiny, tiny switch is mentally liberating. There's something powerful when you frame my struggle to get out of bed, Patel's struggle to call his friend, a sales organization's struggle to embrace a higher sales goal, and Alice's struggle to exercise as acts of everyday courage. After all, courage is just a push. When you push yourself, you may not change the world, the laws, or spark a civil rights movement, but I guarantee you, you'll change something equally as important. You'll change yourself. Chapter 6. What are you waiting for? Tom is celebrating a new piece of business with his colleagues at Stetson's Steakhouse inside the Hyatt Regency Hotel in downtown Chicago. So Tom's crushing his quota for the year, and the win today will put the territory he manages ahead on the leaderboard. But 4 months ago, he threw himself into his job at this fintech company after his wife moved out. Work has been a welcome distraction as he tries to pick up the pieces of his personal life. He turns toward the bartender to order another round, and that's when he sees her. She's standing across the bar. She's laughing with her friends. Something about her. He can't quite put his finger on it. He thinks about walking over and talking to her, but then he hesitates. He starts to wonder, Is it too soon to put myself out there? And then he starts to feel uncertain. Would a woman that hot go for a guy with two kids? Tom has a decision to make, and he's going to make it in the next 5 seconds. In the amount of time it takes to start walking across a bar, Tom could start to rebuild his life. In the amount of time it takes to raise your hand in a meeting, you could change how you're perceived at work. In the amount of time it takes to open your mouth and compliment someone, you could brighten someone's day. And if you don't, that 5 second moment, it's going to pass. Like it did for Blake, and now she wants to kick herself. This is what she put on Twitter. I thought too much about it and the moment passed, and I didn't tell this woman how fabulous she is. She made my day and I didn't thank her. I opened my mouth and no words came out. And I thought about Mel Robbins and the 5 second rule and I wanted to kick myself. Whatever reason you hold yourself back, you're wrong. It's not safer to stay quiet. It's not better to keep the peace. It's not futile to try. It's not risky. You're wrong. All your excuses and reasons, they are wrong. There is no right time to improve your life. The moment you move, that's when you discover your strength. That's the way to bring the real you to the table, by pushing the real you out of your head and into the world. And the best time to do it? It's right now. Right now, when your heart is telling you to move. You know, we waste so much of our lives waiting for the right time to have the conversation, ask for the raise, bring it up, or start something. It reminds me of that famous Wayne Gretzky quote, "You miss 100% of the shots you don't take." Here's the thing. Here's the thing nobody talks about. You never regret the shots you do take, but you always regret the shots you don't take. Anthony realized this the hard way. On Facebook, he wrote, "Tonight I had the chance to give someone my number, and I didn't. And I will actually forever regret that. Why is life so hard?" Life is already hard. I got news for you. Yet, you and I, we make it so much harder. We make it harder because we convince ourselves to listen to our fears and to wait, and we hold our greatest selves back. We all do it. Not just in bars, not at work, not at home. We do it everywhere, in our relationships, at the gym, everywhere. And I think the question is this: why the hell do we do this? You want to know the answer? The answer actually is brutal. Yeah, you can say, "Oh, I fear rejection. I feel failure. I'm afraid of looking bad." The reality is we're afraid to even try. You know, I had this conversation a few months ago with my daughter, Kendall, that illustrates just how deadly waiting can be. To give you some background, Kendall was 15 at the time, and she's a very talented singer. And more importantly, she is passionate about it. I mean, from the moment she wakes up until the moment she goes to bed, she is singing. Recently, one of her mentors recommended her for an audition with a director of some fancy musical in New York, and her mentor knows what he's doing. I mean, he's placed a bunch of kids on tour with Les Mis and Mary Poppins and Matilda, and he has told us several times that he believes Kendall, she has got a major chance of landing a role. And so the second the topic came up about this audition, she told me, "Yeah, I absolutely want to do the audition. But here's the deal." She never wrote her mentor back about it. I asked her why. Why are you waiting on writing him back? And it was really fascinating and interesting and heartbreaking to hear how her thoughts and feelings had put her in mental jail. Now, funny enough, she was not afraid of the audition itself. That's not what was scaring her, at least not when she thought about it. It was everything that might happen after the audition. She said that she didn't want to try out because, "What if I don't make it, Mom? What if I'm not as good as I think I am? If I don't audition, at least I can tell myself that I'm amazing and I'm just too lazy to have what I want." Now, we're getting somewhere. You see, it's the fear of sucking. The fear of not being good enough, of feeling like a loser. Nobody wants to face that reality, so we avoid it like the plague. I actually do it with exercise. I can pretend that I'm in decent shape as long as I avoid exercise. You see, the moment I hit the gym, I have to face reality. And the reality is that within 2 minutes of running on a treadmill, I have to go to the bathroom and I am completely out of breath. I am not in great shape at all. I've got a lot of work to do. That's why we dodge challenges. We dodge it to protect our egos. Even if it means eliminating the possibility of what we get, it makes absolutely no sense. I listened to Kendall talk about her fear that she wasn't good enough and the fact that she could just tell herself that she's lazy and that's easier to swallow than I might suck. And then I asked her this question. What if you're wrong? It's a powerful question, and how often do you consider it? What if you're wrong about all the bullshit you tell yourself? What if you audition and you really are as good as everybody says? What if your idea actually is the next million-dollar product on QVC? What if you're not only meant to meet your quota again this year, but you actually surpass it? What if being single isn't nearly as scary as you think and your true soulmate is just days away from bumping into you at a cocktail party? One that, by the way, you're not attending if you're still with that loser you're dating. Are you really going to let your worries stop you from doing the work or having the love life and being your greatest self? You damn well better not. And even if you do suck, there's another thing you can say to yourself. So what? So what if you suck? At least you tried. As far as I'm concerned, landing the role is irrelevant. Just like the woman that Tom saw in that bar, she is irrelevant. The only thing that's relevant is you. The power is inside you. The only way you access that power is pushing yourself to try. The greatest you shows up at the audition. The greatest you walks up to that guy or that gal in the bar. The greatest you raises their hand at work and their voice at work. You know what? You're never going to stop yourself from starting to worry. But you can stop yourself from letting those worries drag you into a parade of worries that take control of your mind. You can assert yourself in any moment. You can make a decision. You can push yourself to think about something more empowering. You can step back into the present moment and go for it. And you can do it in 5 seconds flat. You know, we're all guilty. We're all guilty of thinking about getting involved, but not doing it. We're all waiting. Waiting for the right time to say it, especially at work, right? Gotta wait till your boss is in the right mood. You gotta wait until the right time. It's total stupidity. And you're not alone on this. In a recent survey, 85% of people that work in professional services admitted that they had critical feedback for their boss and they were withholding it. Why? Well, you already know the answer. They're waiting for the right time. The same is true with your kids, by the way. And your spouse and your friends and your colleagues, they've got something important to tell you. And they're waiting until you're in the right mood. All of us, we're all wired this way. One of the most insightful and enlightening aspects of Adam Grant's incredible book, Originals, How Nonconformists Move the World, is when he describes how some of our greatest heroes are just like us in this simple regard. They hesitated, they doubted themselves, and almost missed the opportunities of their lifetimes because they didn't feel ready. I find it reassuring, personally, to know that people that I admire most needed to be pushed through their fears and excuses and feelings, that they were just as loserish at time. I know that's not a word, but it's one that I'm using. Just like I feel, just like you feel. Let me tell you a couple of these examples from Grant's book. You know Michelangelo, the artist who painted the Sistine Chapel in Rome? There's a backstory you might not know. According to Grant, when the Pope asked Michelangelo to paint the Sistine Chapel in 1506, Michelangelo had never painted a fresco in his life. He felt so overwhelmed with self-doubt that he not only wanted to wait, he fled to Florence. He left town and hid. The Pope had to stalk Michelangelo and pester him for 2 years, push him to get him to paint that chapel. That's right. Want to hear another one? How about one related to Apple? In 1977, when an investor offered Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak funding to launch Apple, Wozniak felt so afraid and uncertain, he wanted to, quote, wait a while before he quit his job. He didn't feel ready, just like you probably don't feel ready for that big thing you're thinking about. Well, Wozniak was pushed. He was pushed by Jobs and multiple friends and his own parents to make the leap. Remember the stories in the last chapter about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. admitting that he would have declined the nomination to lead the Montgomery Improvement Association had he thought it through? Or Rosa Parks' admission that she never thought she would be the one to do such a thing? In the moment, neither one of them stopped to think. They didn't wait to feel ready. That's what we all need to do. We all are capable of greatness. I believe that. You are capable of greatness. It's your feelings and your fears that convince you that now is not the right time. And that's what keeps you from achieving all of the stuff that you dream about and that you deserve to have happen. You know, Grant then writes this line in his book, The Originals, which just makes my heart feel heavy. We can only imagine how many Wozniaks, Michelangelo, and Kings never pursued, publicized, or promoted their original ideas because they weren't dragged or catapulted into the spotlight. Question to ask yourself is this one. What are you waiting for? Are you waiting for someone to ask you? Are you waiting to be dragged, picked, or catapulted into the spotlight? Or are you going to find the courage to push yourself? You waiting to feel ready? You waiting for the right time? Waiting to gain confidence? Waiting to feel like it? Waiting to feel worthy? Waiting until you have more experience? You know, sometimes there is no next time. No second chance. No time out. You got to stop waiting. It's now or it's never. When you wait, I got news for you. You're not procrastinating. You're actually doing something way more destructive. You are deliberately, consciously convincing yourself, now is not the time. Now is not my time. You are actively working against your dreams. Now, Paula wrote in to us at hello@melrobbins.com, and Paula could have convinced herself that she would have never qualified for a great job opportunity. And you know what? She would have been wrong. Just like you're probably wrong about the things you're waiting on. As Paula wrote to me, I just applied for a job I never thought I would qualify for because I figured, meh, why not just try it? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I didn't focus on my shortcomings, but I emphasized my qualities and got the job. Previously, I would have forgotten about it after 5 seconds and not even tried. By emphasizing her qualities instead of focusing on her shortcomings, Paula pushed past her fears. Now look, you may think you're protecting yourself from judgment or rejection or upsetting someone or disappointment, but the fact is when you make excuses and when you talk yourself into waiting, you are limiting your ability to make your dreams come true. You are, not me. Not anybody else, you. I personally, now that I know the 5-second rule, I'm looking back, I am amazed at how much time I've wasted waiting. Waiting to be sure, waiting for the right time, waiting till my work is perfect, waiting until I feel like it. You may be afraid of finding out that you suck. I totally get it. Totally understand. I've had those moments in my life more than I care to remember or count. But let me tell you what really sucks. What really sucks is being older and regretting that you never went for it. Being 30 and realizing that you let fear of what your friends thought keep you from ever really putting yourself out there when you were younger. Friends, by the way, that you don't even talk to anymore. Or being 56 and realizing you should have divorced your spouse 10 years ago. Or being 45 and wishing you had the courage to take on a project at work that you now realize would have changed the trajectory of your career. Sitting in college classes, earning a degree to please your parents, when knowing in your heart that you want to be doing something else with your life. Look, there is no right time. There's only right now. You get one life, and this is it. This is your life, regardless of what you're dealing with. This is it, and it is not going to begin again. It is up to you to push yourself to make the most of it, and the time to start doing that is right now. You know what else is really heartbreaking is to hear from so many of you that have a creative idea or a product concept that you're waiting for someone else to validate it. If I told you how many emails we get, people asking if I can just put Can you put me in touch with an agent, Mel? Can you connect me with a publisher? Yeah. Amazon. Self-publish. That's how you do it in today's world. Can you connect me with somebody in broadcast journal? Yes. YouTube. Get on it. That's how you do it in today's world. You validate your ideas by pursuing them. You kick down the gates that block you by stopping to look for a gatekeeper, for crying out loud. It is so sad. If you have an idea for a show or a book, or you're waiting for an executive at a TV network or a publishing house to pick you, you will lose. Do you hear me? You will lose. It's like Tom in the bar hoping that suddenly that chick turns around and starts stomping over to him. Not going to happen. That's not how the world works. That's not how the world works. Or me waiting until I felt motivated to get out of bed. Waiting until you are ready is the same as expecting it not to happen. The world rewards those of us who are courageous enough to stop waiting and to start. The world will reward you. Look, I'm going to give you some amazing advice. If you dream on being on television, I can tell you from firsthand experience, that TV executive that you hope plucks you out of the sky, guess what? They're on YouTube right now. They're looking for somebody who didn't wait. The person who has the courage to start, to create, to put themselves and their ideas out there, that is the person that will win. The only difference between that idea that you have for a novel that you want to write and British author E.L. James, who wrote, you may have heard of it, 50 Shades of Grey, that, by the way, was devoured by, I think, every breathing female on the planet. You know that book sold 1 million copies in 4 days. The only difference between her and you. You want to know the difference? She wasn't waiting for permission. She wasn't waiting to be discovered. She wasn't waiting to feel ready. She didn't wait until she had a book deal. She started writing erotica for a Twilight-themed blog. That's how she started. I bet you didn't know that, huh? I bet you thought, oh, she was some fancy person who got a big... No, she was working full-time, and at night, she would go home and publish stuff under a fake name on a Twilight-themed blog. By doing that, she found the courage to start writing an actual book. And then you know what she did? She self-published it. She was a working mom who wrote in her free time. Mm-hmm. True story. True story. So how did it become the sensation? People started reading it online. And when enough people start finding out about you when you put your work out there, magic happens. And by the way, that's also how Grammy award-winning musician Ed Sheeran got started. He was 15 years old playing songs in a park in England with no permit and no guarantee that anybody would notice. That's how you do it. You push yourself to get out of your comfort zone and you begin. There is no other way. You stop waiting for the right time and you start. That's how award-winning program Broad City landed its first show on Comedy Central. They acted with courage. You know what they did? They started filming 3-minute clips on an iPhone and posting them to YouTube. Every single YouTube star, from Tyler Oakley to makeup tutorial phenom Michelle Phan, to My Drunk Kitchen host Hannah Hart, to Minecraft narrator Stampy Cat. My son loves that guy. Holy cow. Listen, they'll all tell you the same thing. They're going to tell you that if they had told themselves to wait until they felt ready or until they had a sponsor, you know what they'd be doing right now? They would be living a boring life in suburbia instead of laughing all the way to the bank and living their dreams. Waiting, thinking, almost doing. That don't count. Not at all. Kyra wrote me the greatest email about this. Almost doesn't count. You ready for this? Kyra writes, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. I almost didn't go to the block party my complex held last night because I was exhausted after work. I almost decided not to donate blood at the truck they had there. I almost didn't make the exposure to the nice nurse I met who was also donating. I almost didn't run back to my apartment to get my third-party tools to give her before I left about the new business I'm starting. I almost didn't follow up with her this morning, and when she invited me over to go talk to her and her girlfriends about my new business, I almost didn't go because I was still in my PJs. I had no expert lined up, and I felt unprepared. But I did, and now I will be entering 2 new orders tonight and 2 tomorrow, and I'm officially now qualified for the September leadership event, and I'm halfway through October. The moral of the story, almost doesn't count it. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. You see, the difference between people who make their dreams come true and those of us who don't is just one thing. The courage to start, the courage to keep going. That's why I am so psycho about the 5-second rule. It's a game changer because 5-4-3-2-1 forces you out of your head and gets you to start, and 5-4-3-2-1 will help you keep going. And that, my friend, brings us back to Tom, the guy in the bar at the Hyatt Regency in Chicago. Will he start walking toward the girl across the room? Or in 5 seconds, will he wait? Well, that depends. It depends on who is making the decision for Tom. Will it be Tom's heart that makes the decision? Or will it be his head? Will it be Tom's dreams that win? Or will it be his fears? You know, interesting, Rosa Parks offers some amazing advice for moments like this one. Tom needs to do, quote, what must be done. Tom knows in his heart what must be done. He needs to start living again. Waiting? It's not going to help. Waiting will make it worse. When you sit with fear and uncertainty, your mind makes it expand. It's called the spotlight effect. And it's one of the many tricks that our brains play in attempt to keep us safe. Look, the fear Tom feels, this fear of rejection, it's real. The uncertainty, it's scary. The self-doubt, boy, can be crippling. No one wants to be rejected or feel like a fool. No one wants to find out that they suck. That's why the moment right before you walk into a networking event alone, or a party, or an interview, or remember that moment walking into a cafeteria with a tray, looking for a place to sit, or you start walking towards somebody you find attractive? It is daunting. It's because we immediately start thinking about all the things that could go wrong or how awkward it's going to feel if nobody welcomes you, instead of thinking of all the possibilities. But here's the deal. Tom isn't looking for safety. Tom wants to rebuild his life. He wants to find love again, and that's going to take some courage. And as scary as it is, taking that first step to the other side of the bar, that's when Tom's about to discover all the magic, wonder, and joy in life. It's going to happen the moment he starts walking. Look, you can feel uncertain and be ready. You can be afraid and do it anyway. You can fear rejection and still go for it. 5 seconds of courage changes everything. So back to the bar. Tom starts counting to himself. 5, 4, 3, 2. And by the time he gets to 2, he starts walking across the room. He has no idea what he's going to say to her. His heart is racing, but for the first time in a long time, he doesn't feel numb. He feels alive. The closer he gets to her, the more his heart races. She turns around just as he reaches her, and what happens next is irrelevant. Look, it does not matter what happens, because she either becomes his soulmate or she doesn't. The ending of the story, irrelevant. The only thing that matters is the beginning, that Tom made a choice to begin living again. That's how you listen to your heart, whether you're starting to date again, starting a company, starting a YouTube channel, starting to exercise. You must find the courage to start. Now notice how desperately you want the assurance that Tom gets the girl, right? I mean, it makes for a great movie plot. You're right, it does. But getting the girl isn't the point. Life is not a Nicholas Sparks novel. Life is gritty and hard, and then suddenly it's brilliant and amazing. And besides, did it ever occur to you? The girl could be engaged. She could be gay. She could be a real bitch. Even if she's amazing and they end up having crazy hot sex, or hell, they do get married. The girl is not the source of the power. Tom is. The treasure in your life is buried in you. It is not inside someone else. Tom is the source of power in his life, and you are the source of power in yours. When you unlock that power, when you listen to your instincts and you 5-4-3-2-1 and push yourself to honor them, you will discover the most important fact about life, period. Melody wrote me about this. She said, I've used the 5-second rule every single day, multiple times since I learned about it hearing you speak in Dallas. It has helped me clear out negative thoughts. It has helped me reach out to people and start conversations I might not initiate otherwise. It has brought my inner true self out loud. And that has been the most important gift of all, to be me and show my daughter how to do it too. John Baptiste also saw this. He posted this on Instagram. He wrote to me after he realized that nobody was going to come and get me the life that I wanted to live, that I needed to be the one taking action. That's the only way to create my own space in the world. I believe, I truly believe that everybody brings something new and original to the world that we live in, that it is inside each and every one of us, this greatness. But look, the way that you activate the power of you is by finding the courage you need to push yourself forward. When you listen to your instincts, like I had to, get up, Mel. Suck it up, Tom. Take care of your nephews, Catherine. Don't give up your seat, Rosa. It is clear when you tune into your instincts what you need to do. There is zero debate, zero, when you follow what's inside your heart. The only thing that will quiet the chatter in your head is a decision to move. As I have said from the very beginning of this book, you are one decision away from a completely different life. You know, we're all so afraid of uncertainties that we want to guarantee before we even try, don't we? You want evidence. Hey, if I take the risk, am I going to get the girl? You know, even if Tom does get the girl, would that make you feel better in this story? Oh, Tom gets the girl. Woo! That's not proof that you're going to. Getting the girl, getting the guy, it's a numbers game. To play any game, you have to start. To win, you got to keep rolling the dice, man. If you want to make your dreams come true, you better get ready for the long game. I mean, life is not a one and done. Life is not a one and done sort of deal. You have got to know and understand. Life is not a one and done sort of deal. You're going to have to work for what you want. What's amazing about the rule is it makes the work simple. You're the one, just like I was the one, that was making things hard. This is true for everybody. To be successful, it takes repetition. You know the game Angry Birds? Rovio, the brand that created that game? Do you realize they've launched 51 unsuccessful games before they even developed Angry Birds? How about the Avengers star, Mark Ruffalo? Do you know how many auditions he did before he landed his very first role? Just think for a second. Okay, how many auditions do you think he did? 50? Mm-mm. 100? Mm-mm. Almost 600. 600 rejections. That guy is dedicated. He deserves every single thing that he has. Even Babe Ruth struck out more than 1,300 times. My favorite vacuum cleaner, personally, is a Dyson. There's no wonder why a Dyson doesn't suck at sucking up the dirt. James Dyson created 5,127 prototypes. What? Did you get more than 5,000 prototypes? And here's one that's going to blow your mind. We all know Picasso, right? Picasso is one of the more prolific geniuses. He created nearly 100 masterpieces in his lifetime. But what most people don't ever realize or stop to think about is that over his lifetime, he created 50,000 works of art. 50,000. Did you hear that? 50,000. That's two pieces of art a day for just 100 masterpieces. It's kind of interesting, isn't it, when you think about it? Success is a numbers game, and you're not going to win if you keep telling yourself to wait. The more often that you choose courage, the more likely you'll succeed at getting what you want. When you 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 push yourself forward, that's the moment that you discover the magic in your life. And you also open yourself up to the world, to opportunity, and to possibility. Now look, you might not get the girl. You might not get the part. You might not get the response you wanted. But that's not the point. In the end, you're going to get something way cooler. You're going to discover the power inside you. Chapter 7. You'll never feel like it. It's a hot afternoon in Plano, Texas, and a woman named Christine is sitting at a meeting at work. Her boss has called the meeting because he wants to discuss ideas to help the company close a massive piece of consulting business. It's down to two companies, and the client's going to make the decision next week. Christine's listening, she's taking notes, and all of a sudden she thinks of this crazy out-of-the-box idea. What if we create a custom Snapchat geofilter and we tag it to the prospect's office building? Everyone at the building using Snapchat will see it, and that'll create buzz about our company. It'll make us look so cool. Her mind starts to race with all kinds of amazing things that they could do to extend this idea. Now, meanwhile, the conversation among her colleagues is starting to wind down, and the VP of Business Development says, "All right, those are great suggestions. Anyone else?" Christine has a decision to make, and she'll make it in the next 5 seconds. Now, she knows she should jump into the conversation, but first, she stops to think. Is this going to sound crazy? I mean, nobody else even said anything even close to this. Is there a reason no one mentioned Snapchat? Maybe I shouldn't say anything. I'm going to sound stupid. Now, she's questioning whether she should even share the idea at all, and less than 5 seconds has gone by. In the next moment, Christine will either decide to say nothing, which is a pattern that's become a habit at work, or she's going to find the courage to speak up. Now, here's a little bit of backstory that you don't know. Christine has a goal. She really wants to advance her career, and she's starting to get worried that she's being passed over for more senior roles because of her executive presence. Now, she's been spending a lot of time figuring out what she needs to do, and she even wrote to me because she was struggling with her ability to make herself do these things, to make herself change. And because she hasn't been able to change, her confidence is taking a nosedive, just like mine was taking a nosedive when I couldn't get myself out of bed. Now, she's devoured fantastic books, books like Lean In, Tribes, Daring Greatly, The Confidence Code. She's attended a couple women's conferences, which left her really inspired. She's listened intently to her mentor. She's even practiced power posing in her mirror at home. Now, thanks to all this research and reading, Christine knows exactly what she needs to do. And she knows why she needs to speak more in meetings, become more visible, volunteer for projects that stretch her. Now, right about now, you're probably judging Christine, just like you were probably judging me earlier, like, oh, you know, just get out of bed, Mel. It does seem so simple, doesn't it? If Christine wants more executive presence, if Christine doesn't want to get passed over, obviously, Christine should be sharing more ideas in meetings. Duh. You're probably wondering, why is she not speaking up? I mean, it's kind of obvious, right? When it's not you. It's a great question. The answer is simple. She's losing her battle with her feelings. See, Christine isn't struggling with speaking. She's struggling with self-doubt. Two totally different things. This is why it can seem so obvious what you need to change, but why it's so hard to actually make it happen. Of course she knows how to speak in a meeting. What she doesn't know is how to beat the feelings that are stopping her. If you've ever wondered why it's so hard to make yourself do the things that you know will solve your problems and improve your life, the answer is simple. It's your feelings. None of us realize it, but we make almost every single decision, not with logic, not with our hearts, not based on our goals. We make decisions with our feelings. And our feelings in the moment are almost never, ever aligned with what's best for us. Let's take Christine, for example. She knows what's best for her. Speak the hell up. Open your friggin' mouth, Christine. Say something, for crying out loud. But in the moment, her feelings are making her second guess herself. See, study after study after study shows that we opt for what feels good now or what feels easier rather than pushing ourselves to do the things that we know in our hearts we should do. The moment that you realize your feelings are the problem, you now have the ability to beat them. Let's look at how quickly Christine's feelings rose up in that meeting in Plano, Texas. It took less than 5 seconds. In less than 5 seconds, self-doubt started to fill her mind. In less than 5 seconds, self-doubt was beating her knowledge of what she knew she needed to do. You know, it happens to all of us. Once you understand the role feelings play in how you make a decision, you, my friend, will be able to beat your feelings every single time. Here's exactly what you need to know. Number one, I already said this, but I'm going to hammer this point. You make decisions based on how you feel. Look, we like to think that we use logic or consider our goals when we make decisions, but that's not true. According to neuroscientist Antonio Damasio, it's our feelings that decide for us 95% of the time. We feel before we think. We feel before we act. As Damasio puts it, you and me, human beings, we are feeling machines that think. We're not thinking machines that feel. We're feeling machines that think. And that's how you ultimately make decisions, based on how you feel. So how did Damasio figure this out? Well, he studied people who had damage to their brains and couldn't feel any emotions at all. And he discovered something fascinating. None of his research subjects could make a decision. None. So these are folks that have no emotion. None of them could make a decision. Now, they could describe logically what they should do or the pros and cons of the choice, but they couldn't actually make the choice. The simplest decisions like, what do you want to eat? Paralyzing. Impossible to tell you what they wanted to eat. What Damasio discovered, super, super, super critical for you and everybody you know to understand. Every single time you have a decision to make, here's what you do. Subconsciously, you tally all the pros and all the cons, and then you make a gut call based on how you feel. It happens in a nanosecond, and that's why none of us catch it. Let me give you some examples. When you ask yourself, what do I want to eat? You know what you're actually saying to yourself? Well, what do I feel like eating? Similarly, I wasn't asking myself, should I get up? Subconsciously, I was asking, do I feel like getting up? Tom wasn't asking himself, should I walk over to her? Subconsciously, he was asking, do I feel like walking over to her? Big difference. Christine was doing the exact same thing. She wasn't asking herself, should I share my idea? Because if she had asked herself that, the answer's obvious. Yeah, dummy, you say you want to be more visible in work? You better start speaking up, as in right now. But you see, we make decisions based on how we feel. Subconsciously, sitting in Plano, Texas, in that meeting, in that nanosecond, you know what was happening for Christine? Subconsciously, she was asking herself, do I feel like sharing my idea right now? Very different question. It is a subtle difference with a huge impact, and that explains why change is hard. Logically, you know what you should be doing. You do. But it's your feelings about doing it that make your decision for you. Your feelings will make the decision before you even realize what happened. And how you feel in the moment, not aligned with your goals. If you only act when you feel like it, you will never, ever get what you want. Ever. You've got to learn how to separate what you feel from the actions that you take. And the 5-second rule is a remarkable tool in this regard. Let me explain. The moment you feel too tired, you'll decide not to go for a run. But 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go, activate your prefrontal cortex, and you could make yourself go for a run. If you don't feel like attacking your to-do list on your desk, you won't. But 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, activate your prefrontal cortex, you can force yourself to start working on it. If you don't feel worthy, you'll decide not to tell him what you really think, but 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go, and you could make yourself say it. If you don't learn how to untangle your feelings from your actions, you will never unlock your true potential. It's really that simple. Let me say that again. If you do not learn how to untangle your feelings from your actions, you will never unlock your potential. Here's how feelings keep you from changing. When you stop to consider how you feel, you stop moving toward your goal. Once you hesitate, you'll start thinking.